Someone lose a single key. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 40. Text 1 through 3 and the chapter summary. I'll read the summary. This chapter relates Akrura's prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Akrura prayed, Brahma, who created this visible world, emanated from the lotus navel of the Supreme Lord. The five elements of physical nature, the five corresponding objects of perception, the 10 senses, the ego, the total nature, the primeval creator, and the demigods all originate from his bodily limbs. He cannot be known by sensory knowledge, and thus even Brahma and the other demigods are ignorant of his real identity. Different classes of people worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead in different ways. Fruitive workers worship him by performing Vedic sacrifices, philosophers by renouncing material work and pursuing spiritual knowledge, yogis by meditating, Shaivites by worshipping Lord Shiva, Vaishnavas by following the injunctions of such scriptures as the Pancharatra, and other saintly persons by worshipping him as the original form of the self, of the material substance, and of the controlling demigods. Just as rivers flow from various directions into the ocean, the worship of those who dedicate themselves to these various entities finds its ultimate purpose within the Supreme Lord Vishnu. The form of the total universe, the Virat Rupa, is imagined to be the form of Lord Vishnu. Like aquatics moving about in water, or like tiny insects burrowing in an Udumbara fruit, all living beings move about within the Lord. These living beings, bewildered by his maya, wander along the path of material work, falsely identifying with body, home, and so forth. Under the sway of illusion, a foolish person may overlook a reservoir of water covered by grass and leaves, and instead run after a mirage. Similarly, living beings caught in the grip of ignorance abandoned Lord Vishnu and become attached to their bodies, home, and so on. Such faithful servants of their senses cannot take shelter of the Supreme Lord's lotus feet. Only if, by his mercy, they get the association of saintly devotees will their material entanglement end. Only then can they develop Krishna consciousness by serving the Lord's pure devotees. Text 1, word meaning, Sri Akrura Uvacha. Sri Akrura said, Nataha, bowed down, Asmi, am, aham, I, Twa, to you, Akila, of all, Hetu, causes, Hetum, the cause, Narayanam, Lord Narayan, Purusham, the Supreme Person, Adyam, original, Avyayam, inexhaustible, yet from whose, Nabhi, navel, Jatat, which was generated, Aravinda, of a lotus plant, Koshat, from the whorl, Brahma, Brahma, Avirasit, appeared, Yataha, from whom, Asha, this Lokaha, world. Sri Akrura Uvacha. Natosmyaham Twa Kila Hetu Hetum. Natosmyaham Twa Kila Hetu Hetum. Narayanam Purusham Adhyam Avyayam. Yana Vijata Aravinda Kosha. Rama Virasid Yata Esha Loka. Shriya Krura Uvacha. Natos Myaham Tva Kila Heta Hetum. Narayanam Purusham Adhyam Avyayam. Yanna Abhijata Raravinda Kosha. Brahma Virasid Yata Esha Loka. Sri Akrura Uvacha. Natosmyaham Tva Kila Hetu Hetum. Narayanam Purusham Adhyam Avyayam. Yanna Abhijata Raravinda Kosha. Brahma Virasid Yata Esha Loka. Translation, Sri Akrura said, I bow down to you, the cause of all causes, the original and inexhaustible Supreme Person, Narayana. From the whirl of the lotus born from your navel, Brahma appeared, and by his agency, this universe has come into being. Here we can chant together. Bhustoyam agni pavanam kamadir mahanajadir mana indriyani sarvendriyarta vibhudascha sarve yehetavaste jagatunga bhutaha. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, and its source, false ego, the mahatattva, the total material nature and her source, the Supreme Lord's Purusha expansion, the mind, the senses, the sense objects, and the senses presiding deities. All these causes of the cosmic manifestation are born from your transcendental body. Naite swarupam viduratmanaste yajadayo natmataya grihita ajonabadha subhanana jaya gunaparam vedanate swarupam. The total material nature and these other elements of creation certainly cannot know you as you are, for they are manifested in the realm of dull matter. Since you are beyond the modes of nature, even Lord Brahma, who is bound up in these modes, does not know your true identity. Purport. God is transcendental to material nature. Unless we also transcend the limited consciousness of material existence, we cannot know him. Even the greatest living entity in the universe, Brahma, cannot understand the Supreme unless he comes to the platform of pure Krishna consciousness. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militamena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Changing the mood here somewhat from what we've previously been reading. The gopis' separation and now Akura's realizations. He's a devotee of the Lord as Vishnu. Only the residents of Vrindavan don't know that Krishna is God. Those in Mathura and Dwarka, they know. This is Lord Vishnu who has descended and is now living among us. Now, they may not always be conscious of that because they're also enjoying an ordinary relationship with him. But at the bottom, they know fundamentally that this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Akura is offering prayers to Lord Vishnu, whom he has just seen in this wonderful vision, which he was allowed to see by the mercy of Lord Krishna. Now he's offering prayers. Lord Vishnu appears quite a bit, actually, in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the earlier cantos. Quite a few great devotees perform austerities, and then Lord Vishnu appears before them, like Dhruva Maharaj, of course, is a famous example. But there are others also. Even Daksha. Daksha has quite an interesting story. We know the whole pastime with Lord Shiva, where he ended up with the head of a goat. So he died after that, and he was born again later. And he produced daughters, and from those daughters, so many, all the living entities in the universe practically, were generated. But Daksha, when he was given the task to create progeny, he was one of the Prajapatis, he was a very powerful personality. Daksha, so effulgent. He was very effulgent, powerful, had so many great qualities. But he offended Lord Shiva and he lost everything. But then he came back again, got a second chance. So when he was given the task to create progeny, then he performed austerities for a very long time to please the Supreme Lord. We have this principle in the Bhagavatam that often comes up. People perform austerities to please some person, either Lord Vishnu or Lord Brahma or Lord Shiva. Somehow they reciprocate. In some ways, sometimes it's a little curious. You think, why should they be pleased by this? But if someone tries to get your attention, they say, you know, I'm just going to do this really hard thing, and you're going to notice. You're going to have to take notice, and you're going to be so impressed that you're going to have to reciprocate in some way. Just like Hiranyakashipu, what he did was just incredible. He stood on the tips of his toes and put his arms in the sky. He did that for a very long time, till his body was completely eaten up by ants. He became so powerful, there was a flame emanating from his body. So then Lord Brahma came there and And he said, wow, I guess I'm going to have to do something. You did this to get my attention, so I'm going to have to respond. So Daksha also, he performed great austerities, and Lord Vishnu appeared before him. And Daksha recited some famous prayers called the Hamsaguya prayers. And if I remember correctly, in those prayers, he also begins by talking about the creation. Often in these prayers, when Lord Vishnu appears, the devotees begin by talking about his role in the creation, how he creates this material world. Somewhere I was reading recently, one of the acharyas was commenting that it's natural that when we think about God, we want to inquire about God. The first thing we think about is him in relationship to this creation. We don't immediately think about, but what we try to think about now often is Krishna and his Leela, or God and what he's doing in the spiritual world. That idea doesn't even come to mind generally. People think about God in relationship to this creation because this is where we are. We're stuck in this creation. So naturally the question arises, what is this? Where did it all come from? So this is an early stage in understanding God. In the second canto of the Bhagavatam, when Parikshit Maharaj inquires, what should I do at the time of death? Then Shukadeva Goswami, as he begins the Bhagavatam, of course he tells him right away, you should glorify the Supreme Personality of God, hear about, glorify, remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then to help him understand how one can fix the mind on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he begins by talking about the Virat Rupa, meditation on the Virat Rupa. And the Virat Rupa includes the creation. It's a conception of the creation, how everything is connected to Krishna. The idea of the Virat Rupa is that we understand that there's a person behind these things. That's the first thing you have to understand. There's a person behind all of this. That's the idea of the Virat Rupa, that meditation. See God in this nature. In fact, you can see it as the gigantic body of God. If all you can think about is material, then you can think about God in this way. There's one place where Prabhupada essentially equates even the deity with the Virat Rupa, because in a sense, this is a material form that we can see with our eyes, just as we can see this universe. So it's not exactly the same thing, but there's an analogy there. Just as we can see this universal body of God, understand him in that way, so we can see the deity also, according to our level of vision, and we can appreciate God in that way. We can see his form. So the creation is very important, actually, for our understanding. It comes up often in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the beginning, cantos especially. Of course, as I was saying, Parikshit Maharaj talks about the universal form. And then when he's done talking about that, the first couple of chapters, and then the third chapter is about pure devotional service. I think that's the title of it. And then when Shukadeva Goswami is finished talking about pure devotional service, then Parikshit Maharaj asks him further questions. And his questions are all about the creation. Or mainly about the creation. He wants to know more in detail, how does God create this world? A question that often arises is that God is transcendental, pure spirit. Then what does he have to do with this material world? What's the connection? How does he connect with it, or how does he create it? He asks a lot of questions about to get clarification about the creation. And Shukadeva Goswami, before he begins speaking, he recites many prayers glorifying Krishna, asking to be empowered to be able to speak about the subject of the creation. Now the subject of creation, if you start reading there, end of the third chapter, I think it starts at the end of the third, well his prayers are there. Then beginning of the fourth chapter, the second canto, talks about the creation. Fourth chapter, fifth chapter, sixth chapter, seventh chapter is the scheduled incarnations. Then the eighth chapter is more questions. The ninth chapter is when Lord Brahma meets Lord Vishnu. Then the tenth chapter, we get a summary of the Bhagavatam. And then there's more about the creation at the end of that chapter. So there's a lot there. Then in the third chapter, it's interesting because at the end of the second canto, Shukadeva Goswami says he's going to start talking about one of the creations called the Padmakalpa. Padma means in relation to Padma or the lotus. So that's the first kalpa or the first day of Brahma. So he's going to start speaking of that. And then Shonaka Rishi, of course, Sutta Goswami is narrating what Pariksha and Shukadeva are talking about. So Shonaka Rishi says, can we hear about Vidura? In other words, instead of hearing about, we've been hearing a lot about creation, can we hear something about Vidura? Because you mentioned how Vidura left home and went on pilgrimage. And he was really, the sages at Naimisharanya were interested in hearing about this subject. So then at the beginning of the third canto, we hear about Vidura meeting Maitreya. First he meets Uddhava, then he meets Maitreya. So we hear about Vidura's leaving home and meeting Uddhava and then meeting Maitreya. Then he talks to Maitreya and asks Maitreya's question, some questions. And he asks him all these questions about creation. So when Maitreya starts speaking, he starts talking about the creation again. So we get all kinds of more information in the beginning of the third canto about the creation. So we get another description of Lord Brahma being born from the lotus flower. And so I was been preparing this class. I was thinking, let me try to understand the creation a little more. Boy, one thing I can say is it's really complicated. It's really complex. It's really hard to understand. There's a lot of terminology that's used. As I was doing it, I was thinking, how much energy are we supposed to put into really understanding these things? Is it okay just to read through the second canto and the third canto and fourth canto and fifth canto so we can get to the tenth canto? Can we just read through them? Or should we really, really focus our minds and scrutinizingly study them? So there seems to be some indication that Prabhupada wanted us to really try to understand. One thing that's interesting, though, is I found is that sometimes I really apply my... Because sometimes I'll read the translation, I'll say, what does this mean? I just can't figure out what it means. Then I'll go to the purport, and a lot of times Prabhupada doesn't exactly explain what it means. He sort of uses the purport to launch on some philosophical point that he wants to make, but doesn't really explain in some detailed, complex way what it means. So what I do in that case, and I'll go, the only other commentary I have is Vishwanath Chakravarti. So I'll look at Vishwanath Chakravarti, and sometimes the translation is just different also because Bhanu Swami is doing the translation. So sometimes he translates it differently, and I say, I think I get getting a little bit of glimpse into that. And he gives purports, of course. But Vishwanath also, he doesn't give a lot of lengthy explanatory purports. And Vishwanath, as you may know, Vishwanath has this, as Prabhupada talks about in the beginning, I think it's the second or third verse of the Bhagavatam, he says that Vishwanath has contributed a commentary that relies a lot on bringing in the Adi Rasa. In other words, Madhuri or Rasa. So he does this kind of thing also. Even when he's talking about the creation, then he may give some technical points about what the word means. Then he'll say, but this can also be taken in this way. And Radharani and the gopis and Krishna and so on. And there's one I was reading recently in the fifth chapter. I think it's text 24, second canto. So there's a whole commentary. In fact, Prabhupada refers to it, because Prabhupada also refers to Vishwanath's commentary sometimes in his purports. And the verse, I forget what it's about. Maybe it's about taste or something, I forget. But the purport is about, you know, exchanging the, basically Radharani and the gopis kissing, something like that. We're reading about the creation and we're hearing about this Adi Rasa. So in any case, it's very, very deep. These passages, even the creation itself is very difficult to understand. But here some of them are mentioned, there are different aspects of the creation that come up repeatedly, different principles, you can say. For example, we hear repeatedly how we start with the material energy is inert, especially as pradhan. Pradhan means the unmanifest state. It's called avyakta. Narayana paro vyakta. Prabhupada would often quote this to explain how Shankara, even Shankaracharya accepted Narayana is supreme. Narayana paro vyakta means that Narayana exists before the avyakta. So the avyakta means the unmanifest stage of prakriti. You know, there are two entities. Well, also ourselves, we're the third, but Purusha and Prakriti. So Purusha is Krishna, Govindamari Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. And Prakriti means his inferior energy, the material energy. So this Prakriti exists in two phases, two main phases, Pradhan and the Mahatattva. The Mahatattva is also called Prakriti, and Pradhan is also called Prakriti sometimes too, so it can get a little confusing. But as I understand it, Prakriti, you can say, just means the material energy. So that material energy exists as Pradhan in its kind of dormant state. It's when it's all homogeneous. Everything is just sort of all mixed in there. There's no differentiation. It's all stirred up, like Khichdi. It's all mixed up together. There's no differentiation. So when it's agitated, when Pradhan is agitated by the glance of Mahavishnu, then it becomes Mahatattva. And in Mahatattva, you get some differentiation. Now, the glance of Mahavishnu is also called time. So you can say time is what stirs it up and separates it or curdles it, makes a separation of the elements. So this Prakriti or Mahatattva, especially prominent in the Mahatattva, is the Ahankar. In one place, Prabhupada says that the Ahankar, maybe the Bhagavatam says this, the Ahankar is the sum total of the false egos of the living entities. So we know, actually, at the time of destruction, when the living entities all go into the body of the Lord, at the end of during Brahma's night, this happens in Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, and at the end of the creation, this happens to Mahavishnu. He absorbs everything back into himself, including Lord Brahma. So as he breathes out again, then so many creations take place and everything unfolds step by step. But as the jivas are brought into to the Lord, then they bring their baggage with them, as we say. We travel with our baggage. As we tell you, we have that popular phrase, we have so much baggage we carry from our childhood and so on. So we're carrying baggage from previous lifetimes. We packed our bags and we were brought into the body of Mahavishnu. So what is that? Our ahankar, our false ego, and our swabhava and our karma. So we find these three principles mentioned. The time factor helps these to unfold, to come out. Our swabhava means our inclinations from our previous lives. And also, in fact, it's not just one lifetime, but many lifetimes. Millions of lifetimes, these things accumulate, and they work themselves out over unlimited lifetimes in the future. We have enough karma to carry us off into eternity. So our karma and our swabhava, our inclinations and the specific reactions to our work, they become awakened. And then bodies are produced so that these things can be fulfilled. So of course the foundation of all of this is that this is Krishna reciprocating with our desires. That's why the material world exists. Somewhere I was hearing, I've been watching a lot of Prabhupada's memories on YouTube, devotees, you know, recalling Prabhupada. So somebody was telling one story where someone was really challenging to Prabhupada. In fact, it may have been the devotee himself. He came in with a challenge that, you know, why did Krishna create this horrible world? Which is kind of, you know, the problem of evil, so-called problem of evil. Why did Krishna create Maya? I guess this person knew a little something. So Prabhupada, he said, Krishna has not created, you have created. So we create Maya in a sense. If it wasn't for us, it wouldn't be here. There are many discussions in different places about what is the cause. Just like Parikshit Maharaj, he asks, it's a cow, right, Mother Earth, why are you suffering like this? So she replies, well, some philosophers, she says, I can't answer because different philosophers say different things. This philosopher says that, and this philosopher says that, and this philosopher says that. So, because there are so many causes, you can say, well, this is the cause, but, well, actually, there's a cause before that, and there's a cause before that, and there's a cause before that. And oftentimes we'll hear, in fact, I was just hearing this morning, I was just reading this morning, when Manu Maharaj, Swayambhuva Manu, was telling Dhruva Maharaj to stop killing all these yakshas. So he was preaching to him. And he was also talking about the creation. And the one reason he was talking about the creation was to say that actually these yakshas didn't kill your brother. Krishna killed them. Lord, ultimately God kills everyone. He creates and he destroys. So ultimately he's the cause of this. It's not these yakshas. And there are also intermediate causes along the way. So the cause of all causes, of course, is Krishna. But our desire is also there. We also have causeless desires. Because we're part of Krishna, we can create something. So we can create desires to enjoy separately from Krishna. So that's at the root of all this. So these things all unfold because of our desire to enjoy this material world. So there are different principles that we see come up repeatedly in the creation. So kala, or time, is one. Time is very important. Time is the essential ingredient, really at the foundation of the unfolding of the material world. Obviously, nothing can take place unless time is there, because things unfold in time. So time, it says, stirs up the three modes of material nature. So these are also fundamental. The three modes of nature, they're very fascinating, actually. I find the modes of nature very fascinating, because we can see how much sense they make, the principles involved in them. It's said that in the beginning, Mahat Tattva is predominantly passion and goodness, not ignorance. Because actually ignorance destroys things. So when it's time to wrap everything up, then ignorance comes more into play. But goodness is about vision and actually sustenance and sustaining, maintenance. That's goodness. So in the beginning, when the creation first unfolds, then there has to be the spark of rajas. It means passion. Without passion, nothing happens. Even in the material world, if there's too much goodness, there might be complacency, just like brahmanas. We see how Prabhupada, you might see, there was passion. Of course, he's transcendental. But in a sense, to get things done, there has to be a little passion. It's the impetus for activity, especially in the material world. So things unfold with a spark of passion, rajas. There are all these descriptions which I was trying to memorize so I could explain them. I didn't want to write them down, but how different things unfold because certain things come because of ahankar mixed with sattvagun. I want to say them, but I'll probably get them wrong. But I'm thinking it's the mind and the controlling deities of the senses, but that may not be right. And then the senses are produced by the mixture of ahankar with passion, I'm pretty sure. And tamas and ahankar is what produces the stuff, you can say. That's another, the ignorance of this material, the material world is ultimately about ignorance. So all the dravya, we have these three principles also, dravya, jnana, and kriya. So dravya means the stuff. The stuff of the material world, the material elements themselves, and the sense objects, these come because of ahankar mixed with tamas, the mode of ignorance. And jnana, which means we have to have some understanding to exist in this world, that comes when the ahankar is mixed with the mode of goodness. So we always find this relationship, goodness and the being able to see, to understand things. That's the jnana, the ability to know. Jnana is, in order to do an activity, you also have to know how to do it. So for action to take place, some jnana has to be there. And then kriya, or the activity itself, that's rajas. That's ahankar mixed with rajas, or the mode of passion. So we have these principles there. Then we have another set of principles. These I've been studying, and I have a really hard time with them. Adiatmik, adidaivik, and adibhuta. So adiatma, adidaiva, and adibhuta. So of course we know the three miseries that have these adjectives. But that's not all there is to these terms, believe me. It's a lot more complicated than that. So there's a whole correlation between the three modes of nature, and there's another between these that I just mentioned, this dravya shakti, kriya shakti, and jnana shakti. They somehow relate to this. And in the There's something very interesting which I just discovered recently. I had never quite understood this, but the other day, if you heard the Sunday Feast lecture, Ranjit Prabhu was explaining how he was talking about the eighth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, where Arjuna begins by asking all these questions. So I never really understood why is he asking these questions, because, of course, Arjuna asks questions at different points in Bhagavad Gita, and usually you can understand where they're coming from. But these karnas just seem to be coming out of the blue. But if you look at the last two verses of the seventh chapter, all of these words that Arjuna asks about, they're in the last two verses of the seventh chapter. So Krishna is saying you can understand Adhyatma, you can understand Brahman, you can understand Adibhota, you can understand Adiyagya, all these things, if you have devotion to me. And I forget what the last two verses are exactly, but in these two verses he mentions all these words. So then Arjuna is like saying, well, what is this? And what is this? And what is Adhyatma? What is Adibhuta? What is Adiyagya? I was thinking, it's like we're preaching to someone, we use all these foreign words, and they just scratch their heads, and they say, what? What? What is this terminology? So it's like as Arjuna is asking, because the point I'm making is that these words are very complex, and then when Prabhupada gives these kind of quick translations, and I've been reading commentaries by other acharyas, Baladev and Vishwanath, and they kind of give different, they explain them in slightly different ways, because they're very complex terms. These are also mentioned there, this adiatmic, adibhotic, and daivic. So one way to summarize them is that the adibhotic means the senses or this body, adibhuta. That's again the stuff, you can say, that's being worked. Adiatma is the self, the living entity, who's stuck in this body. Although adiatma is also sometimes considered to be the body itself. You may have come across, there's this phrase in the 10th chapter, the second canto, after the list of the 10 subjects is described, there's some more discussion of creation, and these three terms come up there. And there, I think it's Adiatma, it's translated, where Prabhupada says, the form that is seen on the eyeball. You ever remember coming across this phrase? The form that is seen on the eyeball. I always scratch my head with that one. What is that? The form that's seen on the eyeball? So I have a feeling that maybe it just wasn't edited right. Maybe Prabhupada just meant seen with the eyeball somehow. Because what it means that you see in other places, it just means the material form, the material body. So that's adibhuta. So the body or the senses. And the adiatma is the... But again, the adiatma is translated that way. Although usually adiatma is the self. Adhi, the word is adhi, A-D-H-I, which also means above, or to supervise, or like that, to oversee. So then the third one is Adidaiva, which is the demigods. So the demigods are involved in our bodies. We have a desire to enjoy, we get these bodies, and there are controlling deities. We have 10 senses. These are also mentioned here in this verse by Akura, the 10 senses. So we have the 5 working senses and the 5 knowledge-acquiring senses. Those are also mixed up with adhyatmic, with the different, the kriya and jnana and dravya shakti and so on. So there's a demigod in charge of each one of our senses. And there are different places in the Bhagavatam when you read about the creation and the universal form, where there's one place especially where the controlling deities, they couldn't act. Because they were like, they had to be coordinated, and there was no coordination yet. They had to be brought together. So they offered prayers to the Vishwarupa. And then the Vishwarupa entered as consciousness, or brought them together as consciousness, and then there was activity. So another interesting thing about the Virat Rupa is that he seems to be a real person. The Purusha, you hear about the Mahapurusha acting when it's talking about the Virat Purusha. The universal form, which is supposed to just be a conception, a way of looking at the universe. But then we hear him, how he did this and he did that and he acted in this way and so on. So that kind of adds to the confusion, at least in my mind. So in any case, it's very complex. That's very complex. And that may be one reason why it's repeated 3 or 4 times. In Kapila Dev, when he's talking to his mother, explaining, he talks about devotional service. He explains so many things. Then there's the next chapter. Chapter 25 is about devotional service in the third canto. Then 26 is called the fundamental principles of material nature. So you hear more about the same kind of thing. And then 28 is understanding material nature. So you get a little more. And the movements of the living entities. And that, and you hear how about traveling around the universe. So understanding the creation and understanding this material world, there's certainly some benefit to it. Somehow it's purifying. We hear that the Bhagavatam, everything about the Bhagavatam is purifying to us. A lot of times I scratch my head, I think, how am I getting purified by reading this? It's like you hear about the structure of the universe and all these strange kinds of things with these huge trees, with huge fruits that break and form rivers that flow and produce gold. And you think, what does this have to do with, how is this purifying me? Or even worse, when you hear about how this demigod has seduced this sage. This is going to purify me, reading this whole chapter about the king Agnidra. He's using flirtation. He's flirting, basically. He's flirting with this demigoddess. He's very expert at flirtation, seducing her. So somehow this is purifying to read this. Every word of the Bhagavatam is purifying. But in the fifth canto, it says that by meditating on the structure of the universe, one can get purified. Although the acharyas, they say, this is for certain persons, lower stages. And more advanced devotees can meditate on the pastimes of the Lord. But we're meant to be working our way up. One conclusion I've come to, as I think I mentioned this already before, that you know, if I don't understand these things, I think maybe I understand something about the creation, but what do I understand? Really, there's a subtle aspect to it. So we're trying to understand the most subtle thing. Krishna is the most subtle thing. He's so subtle that he's spoken of as in paradoxical ways. Like he doesn't have any form, it's said about him. So why is... Well, he doesn't have any form? That's because we think form in only a certain way. So we have to penetrate into more and more subtle aspects of nature ultimately, or transcend it ultimately. But we get some insight. If we get some insight into the complexity of this material world, it's so amazing, actually. The material world is such an amazing place. It's like so many things I read, I think, how can this be happening on this solid earth as I understand it? It must be taking place in some other realm, more subtle realm that I can't, that I have no access to. So how can I access Krishna? So this is all there somehow for our purification. The Bhagavatam is powerful and it's acting in ways that we don't understand. Sometimes this principle comes up where we understand that the acharyas, powerful preachers, sometimes they sort of trick people. It's like we know Lord Buddha tricked people to get them to advance in spiritual life. So sometimes I think, well, maybe I'm just being tricked somehow. I think that I'm understanding this, but it's just trying to get me to do something. You know, I'm reading it on one level. I'm being purified, and I may not understand it, but somehow this is Krishna's trick, that this is purifying me in some way that I don't understand. Because I'm in touch with the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam is Krishna. Whether I'm touching Krishna's foot or Krishna's elbow or Krishna's knee or whatever, the very tip of his toenail, that's purifying. So the Bhagavatam is purifying, and I guess in answer to my first question, how much should we put into this? Maybe it has to do with our inclination and you know how far we can get. For some of us, it's like, I can't understand this at all. That's me, basically. But I try. Sometimes I wonder, is it because I have too much gyan, I have this tendency for gyan instead of bhakti? So it's like I want to understand. I get frustrated. I get frustrated that I can't understand this. I want to understand this. I get angry. I want to understand this. But I should come to the point of just giving up. That's what Mother Yashoda did. I don't understand what's going on here. When she saw the universal form in Krishna's mouth, I don't understand what's going on here. Hare Krishna. Let me just chant Hare Krishna. And Prabhupada says in the purport on that pastime that this is what the devotee does ultimately. How can I understand Krishna? We can't understand. We try, but But at a point we say, well, time to move on to the next chapter. Just chant Hare Krishna and do our best. Of course, ultimately it all comes from that. We can understand by Krishna's mercy. So I don't know, it could be 10 o'clock. I don't know what time it is because there's no clock there. There's like a shadow clock on the wall if you look there. A dust clock. 10 to 9? Oh, not too bad. So, should I read one of these verses? Let me read the first one. I bow down to you, the cause of all causes, the original and inexhaustible Supreme Person, Narayana. From the whirl of the lotus born from your navel, Brahma appeared, and by his agency this universe has come into being. So I hope that wasn't too boring for everyone. Any questions? Trivikram Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. It's complex, complicated. Wanting to, because we're just on the physical platform, our vision is very limited, the intelligence is limited, but there are so much subtleties even to the body itself. If we were to have spiritual vision right now, then you see in a different dimension. Even right now here, you might have seen subtle entities in so many things. But because we're in this limited body, limited eyesight, limited knowledge, limited everything, then you know we can only grasp so much and see much. I mean, of course, we take from the scriptures, and some of these subjects are indeed very complicated, from the subtle to the physical. And so, you know, to simplify things, sometimes, for example, in the Bible, it's stated in creation, when they explain creation, he said, let there be light, and there is light. Or let there be water, and let, you know, like to make things simple. But behind all these things, there's so much subtle things had to take place before it comes to the physical.
See? Yeah, I was wondering, actually. I don't know if any devotee has ever really applied themselves, because you have to go to different places in the Bhagavatam, sort of bring them all together and compare them, because sometimes they're not explained in exactly the same way, so that gets confusing too. So I was wondering if anybody has really, really applied themselves and written, you know, try to present it in some way. We can
one time Pundarika was speaking about a subtle coming to the grass, but I don't know if he has anything to say about it.
How do the demigods have a relationship with personal senses?
How does it, well, I don't know. There are 10 devatas who control the senses. So everything in the material world, of course, is not under Krishna's control directly. Basically, he has nothing. Krishna himself has nothing to do with the material world. So he has deputed agents, and they're powerful. So when we want to do something, just like the idea that's there, as I mentioned, the tongue is created, and the sense of sense object, which is taste, is created. But we can't, the tongue, or the living entity, through the agency of the tongue, cannot taste that taste until the demigod Varuna is involved in it. These have to be, this also goes back to this Adi Deva, Adi Bhuta, Adi Atma. All three components have to be there. And that's the idea, as I was mentioning, how the things weren't working until these devatas, they prayed to the Lord to enter in and wake up. Basically what it was, I think the idea that was presented there was that the universal form was asleep, sort of, consciousness had to come into it. So the devatas are there. Somehow they're involved in all of the functions of our senses. The specific ones, I forget how, Varuna is involved with air, with water, which is the taste sensation. And then air is touch, and that's vayu. So some of these, that makes sense. Indra has to do with the working sense of the grasping, the hands, that's Indra. And Vishnu, although, see, this is one of those things where you get, some places it said the Supreme Lord Vishnu, and other places said there's a demigod named Lord Vishnu who controls locomotion, or the legs. So we can't walk. Even though we have legs, we wouldn't be able to walk unless this Devata, or Lord Vishnu, is involved somehow, in some subtle way. And how that works, who knows? These things are going on beyond our grasp. But they're agents of the Lord, and they, unless this, the whole idea is that this whole complex, it's very complex. Unless all the parts fit together and work right, nothing will happen. I was thinking of this, and I was thinking how today in science there's this idea, or maybe it's a challenge to science, it's called the anthropic principle. I think that's the word, anthropic principle. How everything in nature, according to the scientists, is so finely tuned that, of course, they believe that life comes from matter. But they say there would be no life if things, certain properties of matter were off by just a minute amount. Just like, for example, I don't know if this is one of them, but I'll give it as an example. Say the Earth is 93.176213 million miles from the sun. So I don't know what the number is. But if it were off by one decimal place, then there would be no life. That's the kind of thing they're talking about. That things have to be so exact, and the range of what they could possibly be is huge. You're talking about 10 to the, you know, some huge power, 25th power or something. And if it were off by one speck, like one of the things I know they mentioned is the specific gravity of water. And I think they talk about the weight of certain molecules. So if these things were just off a little tiny bit, then there would be no life, they say. So it's so finely tuned. So of course, godly people, they say, well, obviously somebody tuned it like that. And of course their argument is, no, it doesn't have to be, it's just by chance. And there's an infinite number of universes, and we're the one where life happened because all these things were perfect. So if you have an infinite number of universes, then one of them has to be right. This is basically their counter-argument. So we say, no, well, there are infinite universes, but they all have life. And they're all finely tuned by Krishna. So how he's, you know, making it work, that's his achintya shakti. Prabhupada said every living entity has achintya shakti, some power. So the devas, they have more power than we can understand. Somehow they're connected with everything that we do.
You touched in the class about whether we really have to get into Bhagavatam when it talks about creation, because it's very difficult to understand. If we're supposed to understand these topics in depth, then is there a way to make it more interesting for the mind so that one can actually get into it?
Way to make it more interesting. I think it becomes more interesting as you spend more time on it. If you just, you know, read and you just sort of ho-hum and just let it go and don't. If you really want to try to understand and look at the word meanings and look at the purport really carefully and try to see how Prabhupada is connecting it. Because one thing I've found is that sometimes, like I was saying, that Prabhupada doesn't always explain, but sometimes he does explain and I miss the explanation because I'm not paying close enough attention and I'm not looking at the verse and saying, oh, but sometimes I have that experience. Oh, now I see what Prabhupada is saying here. That's why he's saying this, because Krishna says, or you know, whoever, Shukadev is saying this in the purport. And that's what Prabhupada means by this. He's connecting these things. So we have to apply ourselves. So as we apply ourselves, then it becomes more interesting. Otherwise, the subject is, it's just, yeah, we don't get it. We don't get it at all. So you go on to the next thing. It's just like if you get lost right away, then you have no impetus to go on because then it's just a bunch of words. Like if you didn't understand the terminology, then someone is speaking and they're using this terminology, so you don't know what they're talking about because you didn't understand the first lesson. So it's good to try to, that's one thing, is to try to understand some of this terminology because it comes up repeatedly. So I've been doing that. One thing I noticed, there's a website called vedabase.org, I think it is. There are a couple of them. There's a vedabase.net too, I think. But the one I was looking at, so it has the Bhagavatam there. And if you go, or in the Gita also, Prabhupada's books, so if you go to the word for word for a particular verse, if you click on it, it'll bring up all of the places where that word appears. and how it was translated in different places. So like I did that for Adi Bhuta and Adi Atma and like that. I looked to see half a dozen or a dozen places where the word comes up in other places and how it's translated. So I found some help there. So part of it is just applying yourself and taking the time and saying, yeah, I'd really like to understand this. Let me spend some time on this. And then it does become more interesting. And of course, it always feels good when you learn a little something. We like it when we learn things. That's the nature of the living entity. Because we're in ignorance, so we become a little more knowledgeable about something. It feels good. And we're learning more about Krishna. This is all Krishna. The material world, this is his energy. So that, I would say, is... And then if you can find where other devotees have explained these things. Another thing I did recently was I went on... If you go to ISKCON Desire Tree, where they have all those lectures there. In fact, they have a link called the Srimad Bhagavatam... In the audio section, you can click on Srimad Bhagavatam class. And it shows all the classes they have recorded by verse. So I went to the second canto, fifth chapter, and I looked for verses. And I found some by Rumapad Swami and some others. And, you know, devotees were trying to understand, what do these things mean? So you can do it. If you apply yourself, you can get some insight into some of these things. And, you know, the realization you get, of course, is how complex this world is. And also is what an amazing explanation we have. It's not that just God said, let there be light. And of course, he did. In fact, he didn't say anything. He just thinks it. He just has to think it. Krishna just has to desire it. Itcha. Then everything happens. But as Brahma unfolds it, you have the primary creation of the elements, and then Brahma enters, and then all the complicated things that he does also. So we have a good explanation. We're not just dumbfounded. Well, God created it. We're not sure how it happened, but just poof, it just came. No, it really, it's amazing how it happened. And it makes sense once you start studying. Yeah, these are principles, just like I was saying about the modes of nature. They make so much sense. This idea of goodness, passion, and ignorance, or activity, and maintenance, and destruction. We can see how these are universal principles. We give them certain labels to help us talk about them. So that's how, you know, you can actually get a little excited about these things. If you study, you apply yourself to them and start getting a little bit of insight into them. That's what I would recommend. Just apply yourself a little bit to them.
I can ask a question? Okay. One of the things that I have a hard time understanding is when I study the Gita, who is the doer? We're not the doer. Mm-hmm. The modes of material nature, who is the doer? How do we do things? If we're not responsible for it, I can't ever understand that aspect. Maybe you can...
Yeah. Well, this is described somewhat in this verse. You can read the Acharya's commentaries. In fact, I was thinking of this because I was talking about this. I don't know. Did I mention these? Karya, Karana, and Kartitva. These are also three principles that come up during the creation. Karya, Karana, and Kartitva. So this means cause, effect, and a doer. So there's this verse in the 13th chapter. Karya, Karana, Kartitva. Hetu prakritir uchite. Purusha sukha dukhanam bhoktvitve hetur uchite. So this basically answers the question, actually. It says, nature is said to be the cause of all material causes and effects. So nature is a kartritva of karya and karana, which means cause and effect. So nature is behind what's happening here. Nature, what is it? Hetu prakritir uchite. So prakriti is said to be the hetu. Purusha sukha dukhanam. But the Purusha, which means the living entity, sukha dukhanam, happiness and distress, bhoktvitve, this means the enjoyer or the cause of the enjoyment, hetur uchite, is the cause of his own enjoyment. So where the cause, ultimately where the cause, because of our desire. Now this, what you're bringing up here is interesting because it's talked about by the Acharyas. Because there are places where Krishna says, you don't do anything. It's prakrite kriyamanani gunai ahankara vimudatma karta aham iti manyate. To think that I'm the karta is maya. But then in this chapter, the living entity is talked about as the karta, the doer basically, the cause here. So is he doing or is he not doing? So this is one of those things where it kind of depends on what you mean by the word, and it depends what you mean by doing. It's not that physically the jivatma is operating the apparatus of this body, just like you might pull levers sitting inside a, you know, a tank or something. You're pushing buttons and you're moving it along. But we're desiring, and then this whole elaborate, this is actually connected to the creation, is happening. All of these things happen as a result of our desire, in response to our desire through the agency of the Supersoul. So Paramatma is involved in all of this too. Of course, there are, you can say there are three Paramatmas. The Paramatma of the Mahatattva is Mahavishnu. The Paramatma of the material world is Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. And then the Paramatma of the Jiva is Kshirodakshaya Vishnu. So within our heart, Kshirodakshaya Vishnu is there. And he responds to our desire to enjoy this material world. He knows the stockpile of our karma. He knows about our swabhava, which is also part of our karma. It's our inclinations. So that's how we're the cause, because we have all these things that we've accumulated because of our activities and what we've done. So we cause it to happen, but not directly. Somebody else has to make it happen. Just like now, I think that by my will, in a sense it is by my will, I'm moving my hand, but I can have the will, but and it cannot happen also. Many people have the will to walk or something, but they're paralyzed. They can't fulfill it just by their will alone. There are other agents involved. So there are many causes, or many intermediate causes, ultimately. But as this verse says, prakriti is the big cause of all material activity in this world. But we're responsible. We're the cause of our own suffering. We can't blame prakriti, or we can't blame God. There are different analogies. There's a nice one that I like. It says, the bee, sometimes bees go inside a flower, then as the sun sets, the flower closes and the bee gets stuck inside. I don't know if this really happens, but anyway, that's the analogy. So it's said that the bee can't blame the sun for the flower, for its predicament, because it went inside that flower and got stuck there. But the sun is millions of miles away and it's setting, doing its thing. But still, the sun is the cause of that flower closing and that bee getting stuck in the flower. So in one sense, the bee can curse the sun. Why did you set? Now I'm stuck inside this flower. But it's such a remote cause, isn't it? Ultimately, it's the bee's karma that is stuck in that flower. So we're stuck too in the lotus flower of this material world. And it's our fault we're here. So that's the cause. So of course, it's very complex because the material world is so complex, you know, how it all takes place. And that's part of the benefit of studying the material creation. It helps us understand the whole mechanism that we're stuck in here and how it works. Of course, ultimately, like this is the banyan tree of the material world. We want to cut it at the root. Krishna tells us how to do that in Bhagavad Gita. But he's also giving us some insight into how it works. And Bhagavad Gita is meant as on the level of intelligence. We're supposed to imply our intelligence. Krishna Das Kaviraj, he says, don't give this up. Don't neglect studying Siddhanta. This is part of our Siddhanta, how it all works. Don't be lazy, he says. By studying these things, your intelligence for getting Krishna, Krishna Lagi, Sudhidamanas, your intelligence for acquiring Krishna becomes stronger. Madan Mohan Prabhu?
In the beginning, we were under the impression, Prabhupada always say, you're not this body. The soul is 1/10,000th the tip of a hair. And then other places that this body is like a machine being directed. Krishna directs the working, it's the yantra of this machine. So that's a hard, even though that's the most basic preliminary point. So with the creation, if you, like Prabhupada said, would you say I hand? You say my hand. So you say, are you your hand? No. So the same idea, same principle of saying you're not your hand, you're not your arm, you're not this, you're not that. To continue that same principle along, in the creation, it's showing you how all these pieces are. And when you're actually thinking about it, I guess meditating on a brahminical mindset develops, where one's actually seeing. Where do you go back to when, after you had this meditation, okay, you put all the parts back on the shelf, and then when you come back, which part do you put it all back together again and just bounce right back into Ahankar? So after taking it apart so many times and seeing yourself separate from everything, it starts to remain separate from you. And that's the Vijnanamoya stage that one gets to in those mm-hmm. five Brahman realizations, 13.5 Bhagavad Gita purport. And then you start to see those things. So the creation is just having you understand all the different functions, being kind of like from a mechanical background. Mm-hmm. Just like if somebody gets shot and they say, this is the gun, this is the murder weapon. So they say, arrest the murder weapon. That's what shot the person. I was just holding it, pulling the trigger. But they don't say that. Or even with, if someone's drunk driving, they say that the alcohol is what made you drive like that, so arrest a bottle of alcohol. Why are you arresting me? It's because we made the choice to use that instrument that particular way. So even though the actual cause was the gun and the bullet and the gunpowder and the projectile and all that, you could break it down like that, it's ultimately the person behind it. So is the gun the cause, or were you the cause? The cause is the bullet, that's what caused his death. So it's actually quite simple, and if you put it into a legal sense, they're very good at assigning who actually is responsible for that. You know, was it the gun that was responsible? That's what killed him. So that's a simple way. 1/10,000th the tip of a hair. Imagine how big this machinery is that we're in and how it's working. You take a plane, would you want to understand all the intricacies of what's involved in that plane? So who can, you know, it's a Brahminical. But while you're thinking of that, you're not doing something else, which is also relevant. Thank you.
All right, I think we'll stop now. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.